Not in the valley. That's just the way it is.
They continued in silence through the relative calm. Limbs ached, skin was sore, resistance was low. Escape was the last thing they could think of at the moment. Despite the talk of a ritualistic chilling, Ryan felt they needed to reach the Ville and assess the situation from there. And then there was Doc. If there was a chance they could get him back, then this would have to be taken. It would also give them access to a Matrans. But before all else, they had to actually reach the Ville. The terrain was still flat, but there was a gradual incline on the distance. Looking ahead, Ryan could see the lip of the valley begin to form. There had to be only a few miles from the Ville by now. It seemed to Ryan that the wild storms were contained within the bowl of the valley, and as they reached the edges, the winds were allowed by nature to dissipate. There was more foliage and growth here. Not enough to support farming, but certainly a scattering of scrub that was more than they had seen so far. The natural corollary of this was there had to be wildlife of some kind. Ryan glanced at Jack, who was scanning the brush.
Things move. Not dangerous. Yet.
Hey, Mac! What lives here?
Before the sec man answered, Ryan noted that the armorer's limp had grown worse. JB was almost dragging his left foot, relying more and more on Mildred to support him.
Could be anything lives out here in this rad-blasted hole. Don't rightly know, as we never stick around long enough to find out. You follow my drift?
Best way. Imagine the worst and you don't get surprised.
Right, One-Eye. There are stories of strange creatures that live here between the outside of the valley and the heart of the storm. Can't ever say that I've rightly seen anything, though. I guess they may just be as scared of us as we are of them.
That I doubt. Never seen a wild, muty creature that didn't want to rip your heart out.
Unless you rip feist.
Dean didn't seem to be paying attention to the idle chatter, looking over to the left as he walked, with an intent expression.
What is it?
Don't know, Christy. Not yet. Some kind of movement over there.
Christy stopped and followed the line of Dean's arm. About 50 yards away, still partly obscured by the remnants of the storm, there was something that looked to Christy like a small hill.
Guy, what's doing that?
Her cry brought Ryan and Mac back from their position at the front of the group. The two mute sec men standing to Christy's rear made signs at Mac. Ryan gave him a questioning glance.
Yeah, weird. Looks like that hill over yonder is making itself as we watch.
Ryan focused his one eye on the distant mound of earth. It was true. It was growing as he watched, a sign of something powerful. To see it grow from that distance meant that a generous amount of earth was being moved.
Don't like. Anything moving on the ground caused a lot of surprise.
Good call, Jack. Who knows what's lurking here?
Mac, can I suggest we get out of here before whatever's doing that decides to come looking for us?
Good idea. Let's press on.
Gesturing with his blaster, Mac led the way toward the lip of the valley and his Ville. Ryan noticed that the valley dweller had suddenly increased the pace at which they proceeded, obviously rattled by the sudden appearance of the earth mound, and wondered if JB would be able to keep up. The armorer was finding it hard. The pain in his ankle was like a hot poker with every step, and despite Mildred's help, it was difficult to keep up any kind of speed. What he desired most was just to sit down, ease his combat boot off his swollen foot, and rest the aching limb. Yet he knew that this was impossible until they reached the Ville. So he drove himself onward, sweat gathering around the brim of his fedora and dripping off his brow, making his spectacles slip on the bridge of his nose as he gritted his teeth and kept going. Now that they were near the edges of the valley, and the storm was reduced from a roar to a whisper, it was possible to hear other noises. Dean was aware of a rustling from the brush to his left, the same direction as the mound, and whirled in surprise.
Hot pipe! What is that bastard thing?
Mac raised his blaster and fired into the brush. There was an agonized yelp, and a creature flung itself toward the group. It rushed at Mildred and JB, almost as though it had instinctively picked out the weak link in the group chain.
Dark night!
JB fell back and pulled Mildred down with him as the creature, now in its death throes, flung itself at them. As they hit the ground, it flew over them, thudding to earth a few feet away, twitching.
Take a look at that.
That's an evil-looking bastard.
Mac bent down to examine it. Ryan crouched beside him.
Just look at those fireblast teeth. They could really do some damage.
And would have done if John hadn't been so quick.
The creature was a sobering sight as it lay on the dry earth. Its blood had ceased to flow, but enough had leaked out to color the dull earth, framing its corpse. It was 18 inches long in the body, with short, dark gray fur. The head had elongated jaws and almost reptilian black eyes that were now hollow and empty in death. The jaws were long and powerful. They had large incisors that were sharpened almost to points. Mac prodded the jaws with the barrel of his blaster and pushed back the dead lips. The other teeth were also sharpened, uneven, and yellow with scraps of meat and vegetable matter caught between them. The body was thin and wiry, with short front paws that had wicked claws and powerful back legs that could spring long distances. The muscles seemed bunched, almost bursting out of the fur. The tail was vast and bushy, almost as long as the body, with a gradation of gray coloring that would probably act as good camouflage in the colorless scrub.
That's the most evil-looking squirrel I've ever seen.
Nasty little mutie. Let's hope its little brothers and sisters don't decide to exact vengeance on us.
If that over there's a nest of some kind, and that's the direction this little fucker came from, then I wouldn't give much for our chances if we don't keep moving.
Good call, JP. So, Mac, I guess this is as good a time as any to ask for our blasters back.
You've got to be kidding, One-Eye. What guarantee have I got that you won't just chill us and be on your way?
None, I guess. But we outnumber you already, and it wouldn't be too hard for us to try and take you down. We could, but it'd be triple stoop right now. If there are more of these little bastards, then we need to all be prepared, or else none of us are going to reach your Pestilville.
Mac thought about it, but not for too long, as he cast a worried glance across to the mound. There were rustlings in the brush that could have been more of the creatures approaching, or could have been nothing more than the breeze in that part of the valley. Did he really want to take that chance?
Okay. Give him the hardware.
The mute sec man unhooked their backpacks and opened them. Ryan received his panga, the Sig Sauer, and Steyr, returning them to their places on his body, and feeling at once better balanced. JB was glad to see his knife, Uzi, and S&W M4000. Jack received his Colt Python 357 Magnum to go with his secreted knives. Testing the balance of her ZKR, Mildred felt more comfortable with the encroaching dangers. Dean checked his Browning high power and looked around, scanning the horizon. Last blaster out of the backpacks was Christie's 38 caliber S&W. She pocketed it in her fur coat, preferring to wait until it was necessary to draw.
Yeah, that's better. We can all cover ourselves and each other now.
Just as long as it is each other.
Listen, Stoop, if I wanted to blow you away right now, I could. But I don't. You want us for this bastard ritual chilling, we want you to guide us out of here. It's equal now. When we hit your bill, it's everyone for themselves. But until then...
Guess I can't argue with that. Also guess we've got something else to worry about.
They were clustered together on a rough trail that ran through the brush, worn down over a space of decades by raiding and hunting parties that adventured that far into the valley. It was less than 3 feet across before the wild foliage started to take hold again, springing up sparsely, but with enough clumping of brush to provide cover for something small and deadly, like the mutinous squirrel that lay at their feet.
Okay, let's move off.
Ryan assumed command, as Mac seemed unwilling to move, and set off in the direction of the lip of the valley, Mac falling in behind him. Mildred hung back to support JB as he hobbled to bring up the rear.
I'm a liability, Millie.
Don't think about it, John. We just need to keep going until we're out of danger. With that psychotic bitch out of the way and 3 sec men outnumbered by us, I guess we might have a chance to negotiate with the Vill's Baron. If we can do that, then I might get a chance to have a better look at that ankle.
Don't kid yourself, Millie. This isn't going to get better, and I don't want to be the reason you're chilled. First sign of trouble, you think of yourself.
Uh-huh. Like you would?
Maybe.
Looking ahead of her, Mildred could see that already a gap had opened up between them and the rest of the group. Ryan wasn't setting that fast a pace. It was more an indication of how JB's ankle was slowing them. Mildred was about to call to Ryan to wait for them, when it happened. There was a sudden silence from the brush, as though all the hidden life within had, at a silent command, ceased to move. A moment of eeriness was then broken by a wild screeching that began as one animal and increased as more and more joined in the cry, a cacophony of screeching that drowned out the fading noise of the storm.
Fire blast! What the fuck?
Ryan's shout was interrupted by the explosive crack of Dean's Browning High Power as the boys sighted one of the Mutie squirrels springing from the brush. The creatures had incredible power in their heavily muscled back legs. It was almost as though the creature had taken flight, its jump a sharp arc as it achieved a height of just over 6 feet, starting to descend with its elongated jaws distended, teeth flashing as it headed straight for Ryan's good eye. Dean was a good shot. The slug from the Browning ripped through the top of the creature's skull, entering through one eye and exiting just behind its flattened ear, taking a chunk of the skull with it. Its trajectory thrown off by the impact of the bullet, the creature spun in the air, landing just in front of the one-eyed warrior. Ryan would have appreciated Dean's fine shooting if he had the chance, but he was far too busy taking evasive action against another of the squirrels, which had emerged from the brush behind him. He turned quickly on his heel as the sound of the disturbed brush reached him. This mutie was coming at him from a lower trajectory, its front paws tearing at the air with its wickedly sharp claws as it sprung toward his groin, looking to tear into his flesh. Ryan crouched and lowered the six-hour, loosing off a round that tore a chunk of fur and flesh from the side of the creature, spraying a fine mist of blood behind it. The mutie squirrel bared its teeth in a squeal of agony as Ryan sidestepped the flailing arc of its trajectory and stamped on the skull, his heavy combat boot crushing the bone and smearing the brain on the earth. He was unwilling to waste ammunition when he was unsure of how many of the creatures were lying in wait. Bedlam had broken out around them as the creature sprang from the brush and attacked. Christy fell to one knee, keeping her poise as she picked off as many of the creatures as possible before having to take the chance of reloading and being temporarily defenseless. They seemed to have a group intelligence about them, as they concentrated less on her the more she put down. So when she had to reload as swiftly as possible, she was granted the respite she needed. Mildred, too, was having no little success in picking off the creatures. She adopted a classic firing stance and peppered the air with slugs from the ZKR, shooting fast and accurately, and thereby buying herself time to reload. The two mute Sepia weren't faring so well. Neither was an excellent shot, and they were missing more of the flying squirrels than they were hitting. As their blasters ran out of ammunition, they found themselves using the rifles as clubs, both reversing the blasters and swatting the creatures out of the air. They were marginally more successful in this, as the number of stunned squirrels littering the path attested. Fortunately, most of those hit had their spines or skulls broken, only a few managing to recover enough to pose a problem. The Sekhmen had to try to stomp on them without missing those creatures that were still in flight. Dean picked off the squirrels as they sprang at him from all sides, but was hindered by the mute Sekhmen, who were near enough to cause him problems with their flailing blasters, forcing him to duck and weave on one knee to avoid being caught by the flying rifle butts. His success rate was lower than Christie's or Mildred's, so more of the creatures concentrated on him, and he was fighting a losing battle.
Damn it!
Jack came to his aid. He dispatched a flying squirrel with every slug from his Colt Python and hadn't bothered to reload. His childhood in the Louisiana swamps had been spent stalking and killing wildlife far more dangerous than even these killing machines. The Python was holstered in a blur of silver metal before his hands delved into the patched coat and withdrew some of his knives from their hiding places. Jack's eyes burned sightlessly, lost in a fearsome mixture of bloodlust and intense concentration as his arms became a whirling blur. He held two of the razor-sharp knives in each hand, his whipcord wrists twirling them in a figure-eight pattern that sliced the very air, ripping and tearing at anything that came within range, absorbing any shock that might come from the jar of blade on bone as he disposed of the many creatures that flew at him. Their near-group mentality caused them to cease the intensity of their attack on Jack, allowing him to help Dean by taking out those squirrels that the boy missed in his attempts to avoid the desperately flailing mute Sekhmen. But the man facing the most problems was JB. He had decided to use his Uzi on the creatures. The rapid-fire pattern of the blaster would have been a problem in less skilled hands. The cluster of people near him would have been endangered as he spun to attack the squirrels as they flew at him from both sides of the brush. The armorer was no ordinary marksman. He fired in short, controlled, and accurate bursts, the pressure of his finger on the trigger, both firm and yet gently caressing. His instincts took over from his consciousness, and he registered the flying creatures not as a danger, but as targets that had to be eliminated. This approach displaced the fear from his conscious mind and enabled him to fire calmly and accurately. He would have no trouble if not for the flailing Sekhmen. One of the flying squirrels, dealt a glancing blow by a rifle butt, was deflected in his direction. It landed too far away for the Sekhmen to stomp on it, so he ignored it. Mildred didn't notice it as she fixed her sights on an airborne danger, blasting it in the skull with the ZKR. The creature landed, stunned, and rolled toward JB. The armorer saw it from the corner of his eye and raised his left foot to crush its head. Acting on an instinct that forgot to remind him about his injury or take it into account, he slammed the foot onto the prone body of the squirrel.
Fuck!
An agony of red-hot needles traveling up his legs made the armorer drop his Uzi from its firing position. His foot was ineffectual on the squirrel, which squirmed beneath his boot, screaming for its life as its powerful front paws dug into the material of his combat pants and into the soft and tender flesh that lay above the top of the boot. JB was beyond screaming at the pain generated by the clawing. He felt little of it, as the agony from his untimely foot stomp was still coursing through his body. The creature used its purchase on his leg to haul itself from underneath the sole of his foot, clinging on its own injured agony to try to inflict damage with its dying breath. The elongated jaws opened, the sharp teeth poised as it moved its head back to get a good, firm, darting bite at his leg. JB regained enough awareness through the red mist of pain to drop the barrel of the Uzi even farther until it was parallel to his leg. He put the snubbed, open end of the barrel against the creature as the head darted in. The muti squirrel sunk its teeth into JB's leg the same instant that he fired. At such close range, he felt the heat of the blaster burn into his leg, scorching the material of his pants. The pain was so intense that he felt he would black out at any moment. There was little left of the creature as the slug tore its body to bloodied shreds. The remnants of the corpse were scattered around the armorer's feet. Most of the skull had also disappeared in the blast, only the snout remaining. One eyeball, miraculously undamaged, hung loose on a tendon. The teeth, firmly embedded in JB's leg, were all that kept it anchored in place.
John!
Mildred stepped closer to him in a sideways motion, keeping her ZKR trained to pick off any of the creatures that decided to attack. Eyes still scanning the brush on both sides, she crouched to where JB had fallen. He was sitting upright, cradling the Uzi with one hand, trying to pick the snout from his leg, a glassy stare coming into his eyes.